Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, host of the Boiling Point podcast. My co-host, Dave Vale, and I will bring you thoughtful discussions with leaders who are positively impacting our world. This is the Boiling Point, where leadership and inspiration meet. We're back for another episode. Dave, you are just glowing.
Yeah, I've got a great view here, and at this time of day, it can get a little bright, so I'm not going to be washed out in sunshine, but I'm not going to complain because we haven't seen a lot of sunshine this summer in this part of the world, so it's kind of nice.
Yeah, well, and speaking of which, did you get your air conditioning fixed?
Yes.
Just in time for the cooler temperatures.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, we did. It was an interesting journey. You know, it kind of takes me back to interviews ago when Andy Posner was talking about environmental justice. And you know what I mean? Like just the things you become so conditioned to have access to. And he actually referenced air conditioning and socioeconomic status. And anyways, it resonated because it's just amazing what you take for granted, right? So, you know, you bring that up makes me think of that conversation. And we have a guest coming on who would have a really, you know, interesting perspective of probably the immigrant journey. And I can't wait to, in Canada, there's so many things that you have an experience and you kind of use your lens, the value of having air conditioning and the frustration of not having it for 2 warm months in Atlantic Canada, which isn't that warm. It's just the kind of things you slowly accept is your normal isn't other people's normal. And, you know, what maybe is to be a Canadian. Anyways, I'm very curious about this. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought that up about the episode with Andy, because I was thinking quite a bit about that afterwards. And I used to think when I was living in Arizona and spending a lot of time down there, and I would come back to Canada in the summer, but there were certain summers where I would head back down there just for training for cycling, or if I was racing down there, and it could be 110, 115 degrees. And people are just kind of going from their homes into their air-conditioned cars and into works, yet so many people do not have that. And going into communities of people who did not have just air conditioning. And I remember just thinking, like, gosh, how, like, just it's yeah, how air conditioning and heating and all these things like really are such luxuries in so many ways, and how we can so easily take it for granted. Yeah, definitely. And so today's episode, we have Mirely, welcome to the Boiling Point. I will not even try and say your last name, although no, I will try and say your last name, but you walk me through it. I have tried to say it a few times. I imagine you get this a lot.
Yes. Yeah. So if you look at it, it's Sri, S-R-I, Narayana Das.
This takes me back to speech therapy in like grade 2 of trying to put the S's with the R's. Like, you take all of my like speech pathology weaknesses and you put them into the first part of your last name.
It looks more intimidating than it is. Yeah.
It does look intimidating.
You can do it in pieces. Yeah.
Well, welcome to the Boiling Point. It
Thank
is
you.
Really wonderful to have you on here. You have such an impressive bio, and one where, you know, reading about you and what it is that you do and all of the incredible work that you are doing, it's like, where do we even start? But with that, I would love to have us start by you introducing yourself both more to Dave and I and also to our listeners.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for having me on the podcast. I really appreciate it. My name is Murali. I was born in London, UK. My parents are from Sri Lanka, and I came to Canada when I was 0 to 7, kind of. I lived in the UK and went to Sri Lanka in between. came to Canada when I was 7 till about 21. 21 to 33, I lived in Bangladesh, India, Sri Lanka, Malaysia, France, and the UK from 2010 to 2012, doing different types of businesses, failing a lot at businesses, some wins here and there, experiencing air conditioning in some places, not others, going back to something you guys touched on. But that the reason why I start off there is that really, cemented or created the journey that I'm on now, and that it's always been entrepreneurship, but very much focused on immigration, diversity. I'm an entrepreneur now. I run a career college here in Toronto. We run a creative agency, and we do global consulting. So as a group of companies, individuals coming into Canada, we support them through education, through the college. Foreign direct investment coming into Canada, we help help them enter the Canadian market. And typically, foreign companies are looking to enter the U.S. market, and Canada is like the stepping stone to that. So we support them there. We support organizations, whether public or private, in terms of understanding how to attract immigrants and keep them within their organizations. And lastly, it's looking at individuals or businesses, specifically small and medium businesses, looking to expand globally. Whether it's in India, where we're registered, the UAE, specifically in Dubai. And also now I just came back from Malaysia. We're looking at Malaysia in terms of Canada has this focus on the India Pacific region. So really helping small and medium businesses expand there. Maybe I'll stop there. But yeah, I'm incredibly blessed to be able to have those experiences. Obviously, as a kid, it was quite challenging being living with different aunts and uncles and stuff and seeing different things. But, you take those experiences and make them your own, and very blessed to be in the place I am today.
So what jumped off the page in your bio for me is serial entrepreneur. And then you describe what you do, and I go, yeah, this is serial entrepreneur. You're doing a lot of things. How did your entrepreneurship journey begin? Is this something that was just woven into the fabric of your family? Do you stand apart from your family in this? Were you like, how did this begin?
I would say there's two things. One is maybe a childish example, because it is from my childhood. But when I was a kid, it's probably 5 or 6, and there were older kids that got to go out for lunch. Obviously, since we were small, we stayed in. And, they had garbage pail kids. They had Cabbage Patch dolls, and they had these garbage pail kids playing cards. And, some older friends, I would get them to buy the cards for me and trade the cards. I just wanted the gum. The point I bring up here is never about the money or the cards. I just wanted the gum. And I loved that trade. And I think, providing a service to someone, helping someone that they're looking for something and being able to deliver that was something that was just innate in me. I love to serve. And so, some people have these things inside them, but you also, to your point, Dave, or was there someone who kind of guided me? You also need someone to see that and then nurture that within you and provide pathways. And my father's been an entrepreneur since I can remember, at least before I was born. And so I really got to see some tremendous things through him. And a lot of people talk about, entrepreneurship is kind of the rage now. But he practically not only told me, but practically showed me that whatever I dreamed about through hard work, determination, I could make true. And, to know that, not to believe it, to know that as a child was tremendous. And being mentored by him in terms of working with him and learning the business really helped me. And I studied law. I had an interest in law, but always as a foundation towards supporting me in terms of my passion in terms of business.
What's the gum for you today?
The gum for me today. Oh, wow. Great question and great way to put it, Emily. You know, I realized that the experiences that I shared, a lot of people haven't had that. And I thought that was the norm, that what you thought you could make a reality. So it made sense that you would do that. But, you know, I've been very blessed with wonderful parents and wonderful extended family. I was raised a lot by my grandparents. And, you know, when you're a kid, you just assume, or at least I assumed, everyone had that, but they don't. And my gum for me now is, you know, going back to that core of service and helping people realize their dreams and helping them get towards success. That famous quote of not giving a person a fish, but teaching them how to fish. I think that's what drew me into buying Computech College in 2014, because it's that vehicle that can help teach those skills.
Yeah, gives me goosebumps. So, you know, the immigration journey in Canada, how are you facilitating that process for immigrants?
I think as organizations, as a group of companies, we focus on education being the great uplifter. So we do that through the college. We work with a very specific demographic. Our students are 35 to 45, so they're adult learners. 75% of our student base are women. And I had the wonderful opportunity to work with Professor Muhammad Yunus, who won the Nobel Prize for microfinance, based out of Bangladesh. And working with him, you know, one of the first group of people who successfully went through the microfinance program were women. Men typically that were financed would, you know, play cards or drink or do whatever with the money. But the women would ensure that their kids were fed, ensure that their kids went to school, and investing in them was investing in the families. And to see that, and then to come into Computech and see that 75% of the student base were women, we do not only our diploma programs, but financial literacy programs, civic engagement in terms of getting out to vote, excuse me, keeping in mind that many of them are coming from war-torn environments where political engagement was a life or death situation. So by teaching them, providing this holistic approach, they're teaching their kids as well.
It's interesting you bring up Dr. Yunus, and it was a conversation we just literally had with Andy, who's with the Capital Good Fund, and really looks at that microfinancing approach. Anyway, interesting connection for you, for sure. And what he's doing, I found fascinating. So it's so interesting to have two guests within, you know, a very short period of time, referencing Dr. Yunus as a real inspiration. And it's an incredible story. Like, I have some familiarity, but you had direct access. Like, what was that like?
He is a great person. A great person. You know, a lot of people say that's a great person. He is absolutely a great person and very humble. And, you know, to have that type of impact in a community that is underrepresented, that nobody really cared about, to support them. And many of those women, excuse me, are the are on the board of Grameen now. So they're still very influential in terms of decisions. And I remember being a young person, he has this concept called social business, and where he's encouraging, you know, people who are in the corporate world and people who are in the NGO world to kind of think, bring these concepts together. And, you know, there's a group of us that started this social business project. We were very excited to, we were like, our target is 100, da, da, da. And he said, guys, I appreciate your passion. Focus on one. Really focus on one and make that a success, and then make that two, and then, you know, make that four and double up that way. But so incredible, because I think there is a lot of criticisms in terms of corporations, and you know, some are definitely justified. But I don't think it's that, you know, corporations are all evil. There's a lot of corporations that are doing, or business-minded organizations that are doing some wonderful things. And to be around someone like that at a young age, in my 20s, was incredible, and a great influence on me.
Just a follow-up question to that. Like, how did that happen? Like, I mean, this is a world-renowned guy. Like, I mean, was it just serendipitous, or did you search him out, or how did that come about?
just added him on Facebook, Dave. What else do you do? We did a lot of wonderful things in Bangladesh in terms of giving back. At one point, our company there was the highest donator of blood bags to the Red Cross. They call it Red Crescent in Bangladesh. And that kind of connected me with a group of people that were just passionate about giving back. And one of them went to an event where Professor Yunus was speaking and talked about the social business concept. We connected on that and got the opportunity to meet him and think about what business we could do. So we got into the rickshaws there. There's like millions of rickshaws. We found out that a lot of them don't own the rickshaws. They actually rent them. And they're kind of stuck in this cycle of, you know, they don't make enough to get out of driving the rickshaw. So what we did is we did advertising on the rickshaws and kind of went through an interview process to see if the person was interested in higher education, interested in providing education for their kids, and interested in getting out of this kind of cycle. And for those that were, we would do advertising and get some companies to do advertising on their rickshaw and provide them some additional income so that they could go into a different kind of trade or a different kind of occupation. That was our first social business and did quite well. Through that, we found out that the rickshaw artists were actually kind of losing their losing the number of artists that were joining and the business. So in fact, this painting right here is one of the rickshaw arts we did. That's actually the Taj Mahal. And so people would paint their rickshaws kind of like soup it up, how, you know, we would put rims or whatever spoilers on a car. They would do their unique design that they wanted on the rickshaw. So there's some unique ones. So the next social business we did was the rickshaw art. And we kind of set up a website and sold it online, mostly in Europe.
Wow. So from the age of 21 to 33, living this like borderless lifestyle.
Yes.
You know, I think of like for you of how that like borderless lifestyle that you had now has kind of turned into this like being able to create like limitless lifestyles for other people who may potentially not have been able to see past their borders, let alone physically get out of them.
You know, Emily, this nomad life that people talk about now, I guess, I definitely lived that, minus the social media that might have been a benefit for me, actually. But yeah, I lived out of maybe two suitcases, a suitcase and a half for almost 15 years. Which was super exciting. And I think really opened my eyes to the power of diversity and really how people talk about it, but being able to work within a diverse group of people, I think can be challenging for a lot of people who haven't experienced it. And it's a journey. And if you look at, John Stackhouse wrote this great book, I think it's called Canadian Planet. And it speaks about how there's about 3 million, I think is the number he gets to, of Canadian expats that are working in all over the world. But if you look at some of the world organizations that are doing global things, especially in the social sector, they're led by Canadians. And I believe, or I think even John Stackhouse talks about, the reason for that is as Canadians, we work with such a diverse group of people, especially in Toronto. When you go to a boardroom, there's so many different ethnic origins, different ages, different experiences in terms of work. And as you go through that as a child, living in Toronto as a child and throughout your life into your career, it just becomes the norm that you just think, oh, I need to get this person's input and then come to a decision. Whereas other countries, they don't have that. They're just this one culture that work well together, but that doesn't work on the global scale. So for us as a group of companies, we've chosen to focus on Canada and specifically Toronto, because we know this is the key to the world. This might be a bold statement, but my belief is the micro solutions we come up with for challenges in Toronto are the macro solutions we need on the global scale, because we learn how to work with different types of people.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
And thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4Kids Flashback.
When we talk about direct investment, and you know that a lot of the foreign investment focuses on the U.S., I'm guessing part of your job is to sell Canada and the opportunity that lies here that maybe people aren't aware of. What does that pitch look like or sound like? What is the advantage of investing in Canada?
I think Canada is the creator and nurturer of third culture kids. And if you're not familiar with that term, you know, in Canada, we have Ukrainian Canadians, Tamil Canadians, Ethiopian Canadians. And, you know, myself as a Tamil Canadian, I don't specifically fit in the Tamil community. I'm not entirely comfortable there. I'm not entirely comfortable in the Canadian community, so to speak. I'm this third culture. And we create those in terms of second generation Canadians or diaspora, and we nurture them given our multiculturalism political policies, but also the day-to-day life that we have here in Canada. And if anyone wants to do global business, and quite frankly, if you're doing any business online, you're thinking global anyway. You want to understand how to connect with these different communities and how to engage them in whatever product or service you're trying to sell, right? And, you know, a great example of this is when I went to Malaysia, there's a company there called Grab, G-R-A-B. And Grab, like, dominates. It is essentially Uber and all of Uber's features, Uber Eats and everything. But Uber was there in Malaysia, but they couldn't capture the Malaysian consumer base. Grab did. Because my belief is Uber went there with just this Western philosophy and said, this is the way it is, buy from us. Whereas Grab understood that local community, right? The same thing applies in Netflix. If you look at Netflix now, you have all these foreign categories of films, of TV shows, because there's this global interest. This is actually what the market wants. Is Western thought and Western entertainment, et cetera, attractive and in demand? Absolutely. But there are other cultures and other things that are in demand as well. So just going with this one concept doesn't work. You need to mix and mingle with these things. So coming to Canada as your MVP, minimal viable product, to kind of, you know, test the market out is such a great place to do it and see what the trends are. And also hire people that understand, you know, if we think about Indo-Pacific focus, for me to hire someone that's Malaysian Canadian makes sense. But not only hire them, ensure that they're in the decision-making policy so that we go into those markets with the right foot.
I've got a million follow-up.
Go for it.
So actually, I'd like to stay with the Canadian theme. So I would be a fifth-generation Canadian. So I have my kind of lens and my view of what it's like. And I have friends that are first-generation Canadians that describe their experience to me. And it often doesn't fit with what I think the reality is, right? I was kind of thinking, you know, when you were describing the rickshaws and the drivers and some of the challenges they have. And I just wonder, are there any of those examples that apply in Canada that you've seen, you know, with the immigrant journey? Are we guilty of, as a society, of some of the same things where just really making it challenging for someone to succeed? Or is the path wide open? Is really easy to succeed? Like, I'm just, what's your perspective?
The former, it is extremely challenging, extremely challenging. And I think, you know, if you look at the different types of immigrants that come to Canada, there are temporary workers that come. There are international students that come. There are refugees that come. There are high-skilled workers that come. But Canada's policies cater to all of them in the exact same way. And there might be little, you know, schemes that someone can come through. But on the whole, it's just this blanket approach. And it used to be that there were many people coming to Canada where Canada was the better choice for them in terms of their lifestyle, because they were coming from a war-torn nation, or they were coming from a country that was economically, you know, a developing nation, etc. That's not the case. But we still have the same immigration policies. And, you know, if you look at IRCC stats, Immigration, Refugee, Citizenship Canada, a few years ago, it used to be 8 out of 10 newcomers would become Canadian citizens. It's now 4 out of 10, because it's terrible. Yes. So because they're coming here, they're seeing what's happening, and then they're going back, because it is not the same. It's not the same.
I think in Atlantic Canada, we've seen that, specifically in New Brunswick. Now, the complexion of the population has changed, you know, in a really positive way. And I've been here for 20 years. I think, Emily, you would have noticed this as well, which is fabulous. But what we were experiencing, at least, even just, we have a store close to us where people would buy into it and they would be here for a few years and then leave. And I think they had to put a certain amount of time in as a policy, as part of it. Yes. And I just thought, that's on us as a community. You know, how can we be better at, we should be 8 out of 10, not 4 out of 10, right? Like, it's just, it's disappointing to learn that. And yet I can understand what that experience would be, you know, when you're in a different country and you're trying to figure out how it works, and it has to be a compelling reason to stay, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's multifaceted, Dave. Like, I think there are so many immigrants coming. It's scary for somebody that's local. And you know, maybe fifth generation, if they're not used to that. Some people were saying that France is never going to be like what the France we remember, croissants and the reality is it is not. It's not going to be like that, because there are so many different people coming. The same thing in Quebec, right? But that doesn't mean that it's gone. It just means it's part of something that's new, that's being created. So I think there is a lot to be said about, I grew up in Winnipeg, Manitoba for my 14 years in Canada here. And it was absolutely wonderful. And, you know, I was one of the, there was challenges, of course, but on the whole, it was absolutely wonderful. The people were fantastic. And it wasn't like Toronto, where there were big pockets of, you know, your community. I was the only person of color in my school of 500 for, I think, a couple of years. But then you're slowly connecting. And they had this wonderful thing called Folklorama, where you would have different pavilions of your culture. And there would be an adult ambassador, a youth ambassador. They would have their food. They would have cultural performances. And people would go with, you know, a kind of Folklorama passport and go to each of these places. And as a young person, it helped me understand my identity as a Canadian, because I didn't know, was I like Sri Lankan Tamil? Was I, and I came from England, so I had a British accent. Was I supposed to be Canadian? Like, I didn't know. But seeing that, we went to, you know, the Ukrainian pavilion. We went to the Indian pavilion. We went to the Japanese pavilion. There was adults and young people identifying as Japanese Canadian, Ukrainian Canadian, et cetera. So it gave me permission to be okay with my culture, but also embrace Canada. And it also gave the permission for those people who were multi-generational in Canada to embrace these different cultures and see that they don't, they're not trying to steal Canadian culture. They want to be part of Canadian culture. I met a few of my graduates in Halifax, and there's a lot of folks, immigrants going to Halifax as well, especially on the healthcare side. And they love it. Like, I think people think immigrants just want to come to Toronto. They don't. My friends that I were chatting with that graduated from our school, they're like, we don't have to drive 2 hours anymore. It's like 15 minutes. And for them to have a young family, it's great.
Yeah, I think Atlantic Canada is like a hidden, it's not so hidden anymore, kind of gem, not being from here originally. More people are picking up on it, which is great. And that's wonderful to hear. So Emily, I know you got a question.
Yeah, is your college online? Like, is there a virtual component to it, or is it all in-person classes?
We're hybrid right now. So most of it is online in terms of the theory. And then we do practical, like labs and stuff, where students come online. So we do a variety of programs. We do the PSW, Personal Support Worker Program. It's different in different provinces. I think it might be a continue care or caring support or something like that in the Maritimes. But supply chain management, business administration, medical office administrators. We have a cybersecurity program that we're known for as well. So business, healthcare, technology, but we work directly with employers and help train based upon what the employers are requesting. And students will have a placement with the employers because especially in the demographic we serve, they're all immigrants, by the way. That experience of working with the employer is critical. 50% of our student population in our cybersecurity firm are women and women of color. So they're credited, they're getting, you know, Cisco, Microsoft designations along with their diploma. But the environment that they're going to, at least at the start, is not, you know, comfortable for a woman of color. And the team was, the company, although with good intention, was just not ready to receive them. So that goes back to some of the work that we do with organizations to help them attract and keep immigrants in their workforce.
So you came to Canada when you were 7. Did you come over with your parents?
Kind of. I came over, but then I lived with my grandparents for a few years. My mom and dad were producing films in India at the time. So I lived with them there for a little bit, but my brother and sister were 1 and 2, so they could stay with them, but I had to go to school. So they sent me off to live with my grandparents and my aunt at the time. So yeah, so I stayed with them for a few years. And then my mother came when I was about 11, I think. And then I actually didn't, like, my father would come in and out. It's not that they were separated. My father studied as an engineer in the UK. My mom studied and worked as a nurse in the UK, but they were asked where their Canadian experience is. So my father just went to work overseas, and my mom started working in daycares in Winnipeg and studied through a career college similar to the one I own now. And when I was in my first, one of my first years in university, first classes in university, my mom was sitting beside me in the class because she was upgrading her skills and getting her degree. And it was absolutely brutal being in my first year, to be honest. But in hindsight, you know, it definitely showed me the tenacity of my mother. But help me understand that, you know, education is, age is nothing but a number. You can always get educated and upgrade your skills.
What's funny about that, Morley, is that I was just describing my experience going to on campus tours with my eldest. And I was just like, man, I think I want to go back to school. Like, and I could just imagine the horror for him. Like, no, dad, like, you're not going to school. But we were doing, and I was like, it just gave me this bug because I, you know, I like learning. And I just thought, wouldn't it be cool to audit classes? And so your mom may be an inspiration for me.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
I don't think that's going to happen, but it certainly was just in my mind. It's just funny you mentioned that. It sounds like you have some really strong role models, like in terms of women in your life as well, because I'm hearing this strong connection to seeing women succeed. And it's always nice to have someone recognize that.
Yeah, all of my aunts are strong women, that's for sure. But I think that also comes from my grandma. Every business lesson I've learned and I read in business books, she told me since I was a little kid, as she raised me for a lot of my 0 to 14 years, she was there raising me, feeding me, bathing me, everything. And was just a constant, you know, you got to study, you know, she told me you got to save 50% of your money and, you know, invest this much and da da da. I obviously didn't listen for a lot of portion of my life, but then when I read it in a book, I was like, oh yeah, she was telling me these things. But you know what, Dave, I think they're influential in so many ways, but I think they've, to credit my uncles as well, they've had great partners that support them in their journeys. My aunt is the CEO of Cancer Care Manitoba. Her husband's a professor at the university, and you know, they're very strong in their careers, but also very supportive of each other as family members, and you know, helping us in many ways in terms of their nephews and nieces. So I think it's great to have these role models to help you figure out your path and how you can support each other. And yeah, my wife's pretty strong too, so she keeps me in check, which in a number of ways, which is great.
Your serial entrepreneurship, and as we all know, we're all entrepreneurs here, the highs and the lows. I'm curious as to, like, for those more kind of trying times maybe throughout your career, what is it that's really kind of gotten you through those times? And with that, I think of then, like, what advice do you then have for other leaders, entrepreneurs who are wanting to take their business, take their ideas to that next step?
I've been very lucky with my partner, just because I mentioned her just now. I mean, I think she was the first thing that came to mind. Not that it wasn't challenging, but I think, you know, having the communication lines open and having a great understanding and trust, I think is very important. And that's not easy. I mean, it's easy for me to say that. It's tough sometimes to find the right partner. And I think it's quite challenging thinking about my younger cousins on their search. But I think your partner and you being honest and upfront with that partner is very important. And the right mentors. I was very fortunate to have my father with me, but he was also very encouraging of me finding other entrepreneurs and getting their perspective on things. And at the end of the day, it's your decision on what you're going to do, because you're going to have to do the hard work. You're going to have to go through it. But I think having that guidance really helps. And sometimes it's hard to find the right mentor. I understand that as well. And I think books can help. I've always read, you know, Richard Branson's biography, Malcolm X's biography. I'm a big fan of biographies because people go through all these difficult challenges. Everyone goes through them. And seeing how different people handle that and are able to find some success, I think, can be really helpful.
I love biographies for that exact reason. You see the successful person, but you're not, it's great to hear the journey and the struggle, and you go, okay, so if you're struggling, this is a normal thing, is, you know, and you know, the fact that they overcome it is can be very inspiring as well. So that I find a lot of inspiration in biographies as well. So for people that want to find you, learn more about you and Computech or any of your services, how do they do that?
So my website is muralys.com, muralys.com. That's probably the easiest way. And all my social media handles are there if they want to check things out. I think I sell t-shirts or something, but it's not a focus. But the point I wanted to make is it's not about me selling anything on my site or anything. I hope that people are inspired. I'm doing my best to live the life that I would like to lead and be ambitious about my goals. And I hope others will do the same. We all have this something special inside us. And if people are inspired to do their special thing, I think that would be wonderful and make it a very interesting world.
Yeah.
Agreed. That's actually a nice tagline to go along with this podcast, where we want to meet people that are doing interesting things and sharing their, you know, their lessons. So I appreciate that. And hopefully people will get a better sense of what you're doing and how you're doing it. We appreciate your time. We didn't know what to expect, right? Like, it was really one of your folks got in touch with us. And then, and as we said early on, we were reading through your bio and thinking, man, where's this conversation going to go? I really like where it went personally. And at the end of our podcast or interviews, we do some takeaways. So let's do that, Emily. What are you taking?
You know, my takeaway is I love the way that you explained about how you became an entrepreneur and the like those trading cards and just that, like, you know, the thing around like, what's your gum? And even now, like, I'm like, you know, just thinking about that for me of constantly, it's like, what's your why? Like, why are we doing these things and how do we keep going? And yeah, just kind of what that gum is. And I think for me, these conversations always that I have with, especially the guests that come on this show, like it opens my eyes even more to a world that like I really know nothing about on the bigger scheme of things. And to even like to just, yeah, to be even more curious now about like the work that it is that you're doing and in what areas can I be involved. And, you know, it's like, I'll always know how difficult it would be coming over to Canada. But it's like, yeah, what part can I be doing in this? And I know I'm kind of like going all over the place here as I'm putting my thoughts around that. But that statistic really stood out to me, that 4 out of 10.
We got a lot of work to do.
A lot of work to do. Yeah. Dave?
I like your perspective on the uniqueness of like being the Canadian experience and how everyone can add to being Canadian. And I you have a really elegant way of describing that. So I appreciate that, whether you're a second generation, first generation, fifth generation, you know, and I guess I maybe had some awareness, but I like the words you put to it. So thank you for that. It's really very helpful.
Do you do public speaking?
Yeah, I love it, actually. I really like connecting with the audience. And yeah, why do you ask, Emily?
If you weren't, you should be.
Thank you.
You're such a good speaker. You're very engaging. You're very eloquent. You have just so many really insightful things to share. And I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface of, I'm sure, the stories that you have to share and the lessons and how all of those tie back to leadership and entrepreneurs and just being a good human and being kind and looking out for one another. And
thank you. That reminded me of one quick thing I wanted to share. I also produce films, and our first Canadian production is called This Place. And I'm also acting in there. There's a small role. It was in theaters. We got accepted into the Toronto Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
It was in theaters, and it's now available for rent, I think on Apple TV, Cineplex, or you name it, it's on there. So if any folks would like to check it out, that would be great. And it's an immigrant story, but an interesting one if anyone would like to check it out.
Amazing. Oh, I'm glad you remembered and put that in there. And so thank you so much. And we are going to list all of your information and we'll also list the information about your film, This Place, and any extras we discussed in the show notes. And the best place for all of our listeners to find that is on our website at boilingpointpodcast.com. We're active on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, and we will put this video version up on both YouTube and Facebook. And of course, our podcast is available on all of your favorite podcast platforms. So, Morley, again, thank you so much, listeners. Research him. Watch the film, find out more. And this was a really, really, really great conversation. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening. Follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app or visit boilingpointpodcast.com for more.
You looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C, as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, the Fountain app, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.